Scripture reading this evening is from John chapter 9, verses 1, 2, and 3. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but the works of God might be displayed in him." Now the rest of the story from Mike.
I ran across a wonderful story about a famous smith from the medieval times. He had been bound and thrown into prison, and he was in chains. Immediately he started looking at the chains to see if there was a weakness there so that he could break the chains. And then he looked and discovered, "I made those chains." And he said, "Oh no, those are the very chains that I boasted about. I said, no one will ever break one of my chains." And then he discovered he was bound by his own work. So it is with temptation. Temptations come our way, but typically when we fall, it's because of our own fault. Whose fault is it? The text I had him read just a few moments ago is asking that very question. Whose fault is it? Here's a man who is born blind, and is it his parents' fault, or what, did he sin while he was in his mother's womb, or just what happened? Who caused it? And we're used to that kind of question, who caused it? In chapter 1, verse 2, as we began our study in James, James says, "Consider it all joy, my brothers and sisters, when you encounter various trials." Trials are going to come, and he's warning them that indeed they need to endure trials, and if you endure those trials, that will lead to maturity. And God will then give it a reward. You'll get that golden crown, for the reward. However, the difficulty is that we sometimes will see our trials and want to blame someone else for the trials. Who are you going to blame? Well, I think it's my boss. I have a terrible boss, and I have such terrible situation because my boss is the problem. Or maybe it is my brother. I have a brother, and he is just a pain, and he's caused me all of this grief. My whole life long, it's been my brother. Or maybe my sister. It's one of them that caused me all of this grief that I'm facing. Or maybe it's my mother or my father. You know, a lot of psychologists today are going to contend that you have your problems, and all of your problems are because of your parents. It's your parents that caused those problems. Or you might say, "I think it's my husband that causes all these problems for me." Or it's my wife. She's shaking her head, yes. Now, you're not really supposed to say that's the case. But again, that's the temptation, isn't it? We're always going to find someone else. A lot of folks today will say, "I think it's my genes. I am the way I am because that's just the way I was born and I can't help it. You know, it's not my fault, it's my genes." Or it's my job. Or a lot of folks are even tempted to say, "I think the real problem is God." It really has interested me. We've been studying the book of Genesis, and it really interested me as we began that study, and we're way back in Genesis chapter 2, where the sin is going to occur. And it's interesting because Adam eats that fruit, and God will say, "Why did you eat that fruit?" And he says, "It was my wife whom you gave me." And so he's going to blame somebody else. First he blames his wife, and not only that, he's going to blame God. I mean, after all, you gave me this lady, and it's her fault, and you gave her to me, so it's your fault. He'll ask Eve, and she'll say, "It was that serpent who did it." But each of them should have taken their own into account the fact that they were responsible for their sin. The Old Testament makes it very clear that God does indeed test folks. He puts them to the test. But there's a difference between putting folks to the test and tempting them and trying to get them to fall. My very favorite teacher when I was in school at Lipscomb University was Harvey Floyd. He was a Greek professor, and he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. But we were convinced that when it came time for the test, he had stayed up all night long to figure out what it was that we didn't know so we could put it on the test. David isn't here tonight to get to hear this, but I'm convinced that he thought that was the case when I was giving him those Greek exams as he was taking Greek with me, that I had stayed up figuring out what it was that he didn't know so I could put it on the test. But he would always tell us, I gave you that test so I could see what you've learned. I want to see where you are. And so that becomes important to understand in our text. Our text, let me turn it on, that would be helpful. Our text begins, here's what we're often saying. Our temptation is always to say, it's not my fault. There is somebody else always to blame for anything bad that happens to me. It's not my fault. Our text begins, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. Blessed. To be congratulated is the guy who perseveres, who endures, who hangs in there when he's facing a trial. Now, that word trial is going to be used in two different ways. A trial can be a test to give you an opportunity to prove yourself, or it can be a temptation. God, we're going to find out, doesn't tempt us, but he sometimes does put us to the test. You'll remember he puts Abraham to the test. He will say, I want you to kill your son. Take him to that mountain and kill him. And he's putting him to the test to see if he really has faith. He's putting him to the test. Israel is put to the test. God leaves all of those pagan nations around them, and they're put to the test to see whether they're going to be faithful to God or not. And so it's really important. God does not test us, he does, I think, prove us, cause us to prove our faithfulness. And so that's going to be important for us to see. You may remember way back in English literature, a fellow named Jonathan Edwards, a famous Puritan preacher. He has this wonderful sermon that you probably remember, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. And the picture is this. You are a spider on a spider web, and God is holding you over the fires of hell, and he's just bouncing to see if he can make you fall. You see, that's a wrong picture of God. Our God isn't like that. And so that's not at all the way we ought to see it. But that's, again, the temptation. We want to blame somebody else. And if we can't blame anybody else, we're going to blame God. God, you've given me these opportunities, and it's your fault if I fall. He goes on to say, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. Notice, God can't be tempted by evil. There's nothing there that's going to cause him to fall. He is not tempted by evil, and he doesn't tempt anyone. He's not out to get you. When trials come your way and he allows you to face trials, it's not because he wants you to fall. He wants you to be victorious. He didn't want Abraham to mess up and fail. He wanted Abraham to be successful. And so God puts us to trials, but he wants us indeed to be faithful and to endure those trials and be successful. We sometimes, I think, see God as a kind of cosmic policeman. You know, it's the policeman who's waiting there and just waiting so he can give you a ticket. You know, he's got to make his quota for the day. But God is not like that. Such an act is bad and it's evil. And our God isn't that way. He loves us and he isn't laying traps for us. Now, that's a whole different picture of God than we sometimes have. The fault is really with us. You may remember again from English literature reading some Shakespeare, and in Shakespeare, Julius Caesar will say to Brutus, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. We are underlings. It's not because the stars are arranged such a way. It's not your horoscope that makes you do anything. It's in us. The real difficulty is us. And that's exactly what James is going to argue. He says, but each one who, when he is tempted, each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then lust, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it gives birth to death, brings forth death. It's an interesting picture here. The whole difficulty is really quite interesting. And that word for lust, King James translates it desire. The real difficulty is our desires. It's what we want. And what we want is what causes us to sin. It's not God who causes us to sin. God's not out to get us. He didn't want us to fail. It is our desires that get us. The rabbis will call this the evil impulse. It is yetzer hara. It's a special Hebrew phrase for this temptation that comes our way. It is the temptation that we have. It's really interesting because the way he paints this picture is really quite striking. He really takes advantage of the fact that the word for lust or desire is a feminine word. Now, ladies, it's not because lust is really a feminine thing, but interestingly enough, in Greek, I tell my students, it's really interesting. If it's abstract, it's feminine. If it's an abstract noun, it's feminine. Now, the ladies don't like that, but that's the rule. The rule in Greek is if it's an abstract noun, it's feminine, but it's feminine. And he's going to play off of that. He's going to suggest that indeed lust is an enticer. Notice it entices us. It seduces us. Our desire gets us. And when lust conceives, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, comes to maturity, it will bring death. Here's my nice picture. You'll see lust is that seductress. She's saying, come here. Come here. You know, it's your desire. It's saying, do me, do me. You can do it. But what happens is lust gives birth to sin. It is that that produces sin in our lives. And when sin matures, it becomes death. It's that bad old guy at the bottom on the right-hand side. But I think it's an interesting picture that he's painted there. He's trying to paint that picture so that they will see it and see the significance of it. James, interestingly enough, doesn't put the devil in the picture at all. It's not the devil that makes us sin. The devil may tempt us to sin and want to get us to sin, but the difficulty is always with us. We have to take the blame for it. Do you remember Flip Wilson? Flip Wilson had this one line that I always liked. The devil made me do it. Well, the devil didn't make him do anything. The devil doesn't make us do anything. We do things because we want to do them. We sin because of our own desires, and that's what's going to get us. But I think it's really interesting as he works his way through this text. Here he's saying, you got to take care of your lust, your desire. You got to deal with it. If you don't deal with it, it's going to get you. It's a seductress. That temptation is going to get you. It's not the devil. It is indeed your desire. And that will produce sin. And sin, if it's not dealt with, is going to produce death. And death here is not death, but it is spiritual death, separation from God. And that will be the result of it all. And then he has this verse, do not be deceived, my brethren. Do not be deceived. Deceived about what? I think it's deceived about the source of temptation. The source of temptation isn't God, and it isn't your brother or sister, and it's not your wife or your husband, and it's not your job, and it's not your genes. That's not the source of those temptations that get you. It's you. You got to deal with those issues yourself. And it's a real call to understand that. And then he will conclude with this. Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. All the good things that we are enjoying come from God. He provides all of those wonderful things. Notice he's the Father of lights. He's the one who produces light in the first place. The first thing he creates is light. Let there be light, and there was light. He's the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. And the word variation is a word that is used for the periodic movement of the heavenly bodies. You know, the planets kind of move around on us and we're not quite sure where they're going to be. We keep seeing Saturn and Jupiter out there, but they're not in the same place anytime. You know, we're wondering how it's moving around all the time and you're never quite sure where it's going to be. And there's also this shifting shadow. You get this shadow. There's my shadow. And when I move, my shadow moves. And when the light moves, sun moves, my shadow moves. And you never quite know where the shadow's going to be. But God's not like that. You can depend on Him. He is in charge of it all. And He makes the difference. We have a God who's dependable. He'll always be there and will always come to our aid. And then he concludes with this. In the exercise of His will, He brought us forth by the word of truth. The exercise of His will. He planned for us. You know, isn't that interesting? God had a plan, and He's been working that plan out from the time of Adam and Eve, and He's been working it out. And it's really been interesting to us as we work through Genesis. We've seen this whole thing of God's got a plan. This whole issue of the Messiah is way back in Genesis, and we're going to see it coming with Jesus ultimately, but He's got a plan. By the exercise of His will, He brought us forth by the word of truth. By this Bible that we're reading, we've got this message of truth, and He's working it all out so that we would be a kind of first fruits among His creation. First fruits, the very best, what you've been waiting for all along, we're going to be the first fruits. And it's interesting because God will come to our rescue. I think this is an interesting text. Okay, whose fault is it? That's the whole issue. Whose fault is it? You can't blame anybody or anything else. If you sin, it's your fault and you got to own up to it. One of my favorite texts is from 1 John. And in 1 John, that first chapter, he will say, if we confess our faults, He is faithful and just to forgive us our sins. And again, it's really quite interesting. The word confess, I would translate not confess, I'd translate it acknowledge. You got to own up to it. Everybody's going to sin. He makes a big deal of the fact everybody's a sinner. But you got to own up to your sin. If you want to be forgiven, you got to own up to it. You got to say, I messed up. And you got to say, yes, God, I've messed up and I want to do better. I want You to help me to live the kind of wholesome life I ought to live. Acknowledge your sin. What a wonderful text. Who's to blame? I'm to blame. I fall short, and I need the grace of God to make the difference. God comes to our rescue, and He's brought His Son to rescue us. And so it is the grace of God that makes all of the difference. We're going to sing a song as an invitation song, as we always do whenever we come together. It's an opportunity for folks to respond to the message if they need to. And you can't say it's not my fault. Whose fault is it? It's my fault. You got to be willing to say, indeed, I'm a sinner and I need Jesus. I want to confess Him as Lord. I want to be buried in baptism and I want to start walking that new life. And I want to put my faith in God to deliver me. If you need to come, would you come as we stand and as we sing?